Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're taking your calls, 410-662-8780, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. Happy to take your questions on any food and wine.
Absolutely.
Travel, entertaining related topics. And
that's what we're here to talk about.
Well, we're here to talk about soup.
I know. Right? I'm so excited. It's one of my favorite things. People often ask me what are your favorite things to cook, and sauces and soups are some of my very, and rice dishes are some of my favorite things to make in the kitchen. I think because they're labors of love.
The season change. Well, some soups are pretty straightforward, especially once you get the hang of them.
They can be, yeah. And they can also, you can also take time with it either way. Yeah, because I think one of the greatest things is I always feel relief at work when I'm realizing I don't have to puree something, because we almost always puree all of our soups, you know, just to make it finer or nicer or have a better texture or whatever, or it's just appropriate for that particular soup. And it's always fun when you're at home and I'm like, oh, all I have to do is make this. I don't have to do anything else afterwards.
Yeah, you don't have to. Well, I mean, that's, your style is very refined at work. It's nice to be able to dress down a little bit. I mean, that's something that, you know, I tend to like more gutsy stuff, you know, so I mean, that's...
Yeah, I tend to be more French-based and you seem to be more, you know, Italian, Spanish-based in your cooking, or...
Yeah, the Mediterranean definitely...
Mediterranean.
Speaks to me.
Mm-hmm.
No
question. Love it. We both love it all, but yeah, we do definitely have different cooking styles.
So what's the best soup you've ever had... In a restaurant, what's the fanciest, craziest?
Okay, I'm glad
craziest,
you said in a restaurant, because I almost said
don't tell me it was yours.
I mean, I was going to say my mother's chicken noodle soup.
Okay,
Tony.
Okay, but that, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to your mom's chicken noodle soup.
Yes.
So the best in a restaurant, the one that like struck you, that really hit you, that like totally made your day.
The first time I had French onion soup in a restaurant in Chicago.
Really?
Oh, no question. And I was, I was probably, you know, 10 years old, 11 years old. And I just remember seeing all that cheese on top and thinking, oh, what is happening here? It's like a bowl of cheese, of molten lava cheese. Oh, it looks so good. It was all brown and it was sort of bubbling. And I'm like, oh, what is this? You know, and that makes sense. I mean, it's sort of fascinating. I mean, it's the most unusual of all the soups, really, besides maybe consommé. And you have to be you have to know something about food to understand that consommé is like one of the more complicated things that you can make.
Yeah, I was expecting you to tell me that a consommé that you had, a Le Crayer in 2004, or Joël Robuchon's chestnut soup, or, you know.
Oh, definitely. I mean, actually my favorite soup in a very fine restaurant is from Guy Savoy, and it's his artichoke soup. And it's funny because he just posted a picture of it on Instagram today, and I commented on it because it really is one of the best soups I've ever had. So I think the first one is
that
from
is
childhood.
Lovely. It's not heavy.
The French onion soup is a memory from childhood and as an adult and getting to eat in some really amazing restaurants. It's his artichoke soup. And, you know, the fact that it doesn't hurt that he gets some of the best truffles in the world and he garnishes it with that. And then it also doesn't hurt at all that he makes a brioche that is one of the more complicated, probably, pieces of bread that has truffle in it. And it is the best accompaniment in the world. And if someone gave that to me right now, I'd be so, so happy. It's actually
that's, listeners are not going to bring you that soup right now.
Oh, please. Okay. Well, but
listeners can chime in because we're live, 410-662-8780. Tell us the best soup that you ever had, whether it was your mom's chicken noodle soup or if you have a special recipe for a soup that you think the world needs to know, or if you dined at a particular restaurant, a fine restaurant, or a very relaxed restaurant, and it just something completely made your day and it struck you, and maybe it's from years ago.
And I think that's soup leaves such memory because it's so heartwarming, you know. It's just, go ahead.
You can reach us 410-662-8780. Or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. So how do you think Guy Savoy makes that artichoke soup?
I think he makes an incredible stock because it has such an amazing sort of earthy flavor to it. This is the foundation of the soup is just, it's almost like it's got to be veal stock because our stock, we use chicken bones and veal bones, and it creates a sweeter tone and a less sort of bony, if you will, flavor or base flavor, base in a good way. With the veal bones, it's just very neutral. And I think that's probably the foundation of the artichoke stock that he then makes. That's my guess. I mean, I've never seen a recipe for it, and I've never asked. But it just tastes so much like veal bones and artichokes to me. And it tastes like almost nothing else.
Well, when you say veal bones, the thing, if you haven't had pure veal stock, is it, like you said, it's not colored in a particular direction. And I think that those veal bones are not ones that are roasted really hard.
No, it's got to be a white stock.
I think it's got to be a white stock.
Oh, no, it's definitely a white stock.
There's big body, but it's all background. The more that you roast it, the more that you make, the browner you make the stock.
Mm-hmm. The browner the bones.
The browner the bones and the more flavor that you have.
Right.
That's more aggressively out front.
So what Tony's telling you is you can make a stock two ways. You can either brown the bones or you don't brown the bones. And a stock that is not brown is called a white stock, whatever bones you're using. And a brown stock, that's how we define stocks in cooking, are roasted bones. So if in this soup, because it is so much about the artichokes, I'm certain that it is a white veal stock, and meaning the bones are not browned. And really, he finishes it with shaved Reggiano when I make the soup as well, because it inspired me so much the first time I had it. And I've had it multiple times over the years, over a long period of time, frankly. When I decided to make it, I added lemon to mine and I added Reggiano to it when I puree it. So mine tastes very, quite different actually from his, but it is inspired by his soup. And I think what I love about his is that very meaty sort of flavor and the fresh artichoke flavor. And mine, what I love about mine is that it's brighter. It has that lemon in it and it has that tone of the Reggiano.
The Parmigiano is important too.
Yeah, I love that.
Soup.
Yeah, I love it. So they're two different soups coming from the inspiration of the first one.
Well, I mean, sometimes when there's a masterwork, you don't want to replicate it.
Exactly. That's his signature dish.
That is
such a signature dish for him.
Let's go to our first caller. We've got Mike in Frederick. Mike, how are you?
Hi, Mike.
Hi, guys. Such a pleasure. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share with you, since you're talking about soup, I got so excited because 26 years ago, I was in Lanzarote, and I went to a restaurant that was on the coast where they actually pulled a fresh shark right out of the water.
Wow.
Now, the fascinating thing was that they broke down the fish, obviously, and used the meat, but then they took the bones and made a stock. But then the chef turned around and made a shark fin soup that to this day I wish I could replicate it because I don't know if it's just the magic of the moment, but it was absolutely delicious. But now in today's day and age, I cringe at the thought that I, participated in hurting such a beautiful species. Mm. But that's all. Even though food can be fabulous, you got to be careful because you never know in the future what might unfold.
You're exactly right. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's and within 26 years, we've developed a lot more thoughtfulness about what we consume and where it comes from. And
yeah, absolutely.
But it sounds almost like a movie scene.
That sounds like an amazing experience. Yes. Wow. So what's your favorite soup, Tony?
Favorite that I ever had in a restaurant?
In a restaurant.
It's funny. Mine inspired a soup that I love that maybe later on I'll give the recipe for. In Liguria, in a little town, San Rocco, right along the Mediterranean coast, that whole area is famous for their fish stews and fish soups. And I have a strong feeling that there's little individual interpretations that happen with each individual cook along the way. But this is one that was made with orata and cod.
Oh, wow.
Orata, dorade in French.
Yeah.
Right? And so an oily fish and then a very flaky fish. And little teeny tiny clams. I mean, like thumbnail sized.
Wonderful.
Clams. I mean, it seemed like there were hundreds of them. And bruschetta, ooh, grilled bread.
Yum. Good for the broth.
And served with a lot of bigato, which is a white wine from Liguria that can be super interesting and great for that sort of the brininess that comes with a fish soup. But it was also, it's one of those atmospheric things. It's like you're sitting in an olive grove along the coast on a table that's like on a rock that goes down to the shore 100 feet below.
That's amazing.
And they're serving soup out of a you know, a giant stone pot.
Oh, gosh. That's
a, and there's a platter,
that's a movie
and there's
set
a platter
too.
Of the bread. And, you know, and yeah, it was
that's nice.
Pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
So you were going to talk about your mom's chicken noodle.
You know, every single person in my family hopes that my mother will pull that out of the, you know, refrigerator when you go to visit. It's just one of those things. She always made a very, very good chicken stock. And, you know, she would just stew the chicken and then always made chicken salad from the stewed meat. She was very good at utilizing absolutely everything. And that was the way she was raised. And so she would stew the chicken with a little bit of onion and celery and carrot and water, and very simple. I think she might have put some peppercorns in there, but, you know, I doubt anything else. And then she used to make her own noodles. And then as we got a little bit older, I think she started to buy them. But, you know, it's sort of similar to the process of making pot pie from her family's recipe, which is the same thing. You would stew the chicken, and she would make a really good dough and a little bit thicker, roll it out into pretty wide strips. And that's how she made pot pie. And then she would add the picked meat back to the pot pie. So it was really more almost like some form of pasta, you know, a Pennsylvania Dutch sort of form of pasta with
rich egg noodles that they make.
Oh, my God. So, so darn delicious. Yeah, one of the last times she was at my house here in Baltimore, she and I made the noodles together because I'd seen her make it, but I'd never. And I'm like, I have to learn how to make this from her. It's too important to our family recipe. But getting back to the chicken noodle soup, I mean, I think that it's just a restorative. I mean, there's just no question. I mean, for everyone, I think so many different cultures, there's so many different versions of a chicken broth and what it can do for you and make you feel better. And
yeah, we are in that season, right?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. And so, I mean, I think it's just great to have a good chicken broth around. You can put it in your freezer. I'm not a proponent of freezing things, but it's nice to have that you can pull out and just warm it up when someone's not feeling well or you just feel the need, you know, for. And I mean, I know that my guys at work would add cilantro and lime to a good chicken broth, and that's one of my favorite things to have now. So there are just so many wonderful things you can do with chicken broth, but chicken noodle soup is definitely our family favorite.
What soups do you think are better the next day, you know, that really develop more flavor?
I think almost every soup is better the next day. I mean, quite frankly, unless it's like a pureed English pea soup or something like that, where it's bright green and you really need to retain that color and have it be really fresh or cold soup.
If you're chasing texture.
Those things need to be eaten that day. But, you know, let's say you're making black bean soup or any sort of mushroom, even when I make mushroom soup, I prefer to make it the day before and let it sit overnight. But anything that's a broth-based soup, and particularly with beans, that the beans just can continue even as the broth cools down. Obviously, the starch continues to absorb that liquid. It just gets better and better every
day. And the texture on bean soup's much better next day.
Yeah, the next day. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think one of the things
I wouldn't do that with a seafood soup. Excuse me.
No,
that's
exactly
the one thing I would exclude from that completely. If I'm making any sort of seafood soup, I would serve it and eat it.
Yeah, no question.
Make it and eat it. Excuse me.
So we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780. We're talking about soup. We'd love to hear about your favorite soup you ever had, or if there's a family recipe you want to share. You can email us, formanwolf@wypr.org. In the next segment, I know we have some emails to get to, and we'd love to hear from more callers. And somewhere in the third segment, Cindy's going to have a breakdown when she gets the chef's challenge that she's going to get. All of that and more on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine on WYPR. Welcome back to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
We're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we have a few listener emails. I've got one from Willis and Waverly. I tend to do a triple threat when I make soup.
Mm.
I choose three different elements and cook them together in good broth and puree it. Recently, I've been making butternut squash, apple, and white sweet potato.
Oh, yeah. That sounds delicious. Yummy.
Yeah, especially a nice crispy apple like Granny Smith.
That'd oh, golly, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's good instinct.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go to a caller, Melody, in Baltimore.
Hi, Melody.
Is on the line. We're talking about soup.
Hi.
You're on the air.
Hi. So I had a quick question. First of all, my two favorite soups are cream of asparagus and cream of cauliflower. And I would like to get a hint on making a really, really, really special fresh fava bean soup. My husband was from Sicily, and fava were a huge part of our life, and mm-hmm. that is the one soup that he did not teach me how to make.
Mm-hmm. I love fava beans. If you want to make a cream-based soup, I'm not sure if you do or not, or you could make a stock-based soup. Either way, I would make my foundation soup. So let's just say you want to do stock and you don't want any dairy product in there. You could saute onions and shallots onions and shallots in olive oil, or not olive oil, corn oil, and add chicken stock to it. Let it come up to a boil and let it cook for about 20 minutes. And any other seasoning that you might want. To me, you don't need any. If you love pork, you could add some bacon to it a little bit, but that's going to take it in a totally different direction probably from what he's used to. And make that foundation soup, let it cook, and then add the fava beans, which obviously have to be out of the shell and peeled at this point. So you would have had to have done that first. Drop them into the soup, cook them for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then immediately blend it. And immediately, if you're not eating it right then and there, you're going to want to ice it down so you don't lose all the color. You're still not going to have a bright green soup, but you will have good color. So if you go ahead and ice it down immediately and stop that cooking process, you'll have a pretty good, and I would just season it with salt and pepper. If you wanted to add cream to it, you could make it the same way and add a little bit of cream. You could finish it with a little bit of cream, or you could add a little bit of garlic, and I'm sure Tony has an idea for this as well.
So where in Sicily is he from?
He was from Catania.
Okay, so chances are was it a brothy soup?
Yeah, it actually was a brothy soup. He was very averse to using any kind of dairy.
Yeah, you see that usually down there. Chances are, I mean, in a perfect world, you'd make that with pork bones or even a pig's foot, and you get really rich flavor out of that, especially if you roast those two things together. When you do that base, you probably would use a little bit more onion than you ever think when you make the mirepoix. Mm-hmm. Bay leaves, clove, and when you go to garnish that soup, I'm sure it was always bruschetta, the grilled bread with good olive oil.
Yep.
And did he use crushed tomato or fresh tomato?
No, he never used tomato in his fava soup.
Okay.
It was
a winter's soup then.
Mm-hmm.
It was a winter's soup. There's a variation down there where they use roasted butternut squash as as a garnish in that sort of soup, which is awfully nice.
Mm-hmm.
But
that's wonderful. I'm curious to know if you would allow a substitution of just like some, if we crisped up some pancetta, as opposed to the other pork products that you mentioned.
It's probably a lot easier to keep chicken stock around, and to use the crispy pancetta as a garnish.
Sounds good.
To give that flavor, and yeah, I mean in a heartbeat. The thing is to get the fresh fava beans in season. I'm afraid you're gonna have to wait for those guys.
Yeah.
You have to
wait for them, and you never they're gone before you know it.
That's for sure.
There they are.
Yeah, I love favas. I'm with you on this.
Oh, that's great to hear, Melanie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Have a
Thank
good
you
day.
Very much.
Bye, Melanie.
Thank you too. Bye bye.
Bye. Yeah, we have exactly the same approach with the same question, right?
Obviously not. Oh my gosh. I mean, both, though. You know, it's just,
yeah,
you know.
Different kinds of cooking. There's lots of good cooking in the world.
Right.
We want to hear your thoughts, your opinions about soup. Call us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org.
Actually, crispy pancetta. Sorry. Go ahead,
crispy
Tony.
Pancetta.
I keep interrupting.
That's way up
I can sit here and think about crispy pancetta. It sounds so good.
So let's see. We've got an email from Carol in Baltimore. The best soup I've ever had was at a restaurant in Hartford, Connecticut called The Firebox. They had a spring soup, in quotes. It was a broth with countless fresh vegetables, great out of the garden. I've never known the flavor of food explode my mouth the way that soup did. The variety of textures, that was amazing. I dream about it. Here we are in autumn being teased by Carol.
That sounds good.
So
I love people's memories of food. I mean, it's so amazing what food does for us, let alone all the holiday stuff, you know, all those memories from childhood. And
let's go ahead and take a call from Gene in Baltimore. Gene, how are you?
Hi, Gene.
Hi. I have a question about cream of crab, because it's some of the best soup and some of the worst soup I've had.
Right?
I agree with both of those.
Exactly.
Like a gray gelatinous gravy.
Right.
And then I've also had an absolutely delicious cream of crab light and topped with sherry and roe. And I just wanted to...
I think this one's up my alley.
This is way up your alley.
Tony doesn't get to talk this time.
No grancho in this one.
I think you have to decide if you want to add a roux to it or not. So a roux is butter and flour in equal parts used as a thickening agent. And in the traditional soup of the Lowcountry area, they used to use the roe from the female crabs as a thickening agent. And that is not okay. So we can't do that anymore, because obviously we want to keep our crab population up. So I add a light roux. And, you know, that's when you start talking about gelatinous. I mean, even in Charleston, South Carolina, I've had soups where I'm like, oh, my gosh, could you have put any more roux in here? So cream, a little bit of very little bit of onion and shallot. I always put a tiny bit of carrots in there. I end up passing the soup through a fine sieve. I don't actually puree it, which is rare, because I just want the flavor of the mirepoix in there. I don't want it to actually be pureed into it or change the color, which carrots would do. So just a tiny bit of carrot, onion, celery, saute it in butter. You have to make your own crab stock. So you add your crab stock, reduce it down by, you know, almost to by 75%, and then add cream. I add a touch of cayenne pepper and a little bit of salt to finish, a little bit of black pepper to finish. I do finish my soup with, we use manzanilla sherry in our cream of crab, and then I pour the hot soup over the crab meat. A quick way to make crab stock, obviously the crabs need to be live. You chop them in quarters and sear them off in a big, you know, heavy bottom saute pan, preferably stainless steel with oil in the bottom. Just work them for a couple of minutes, then throw in carrot, celery, and onion. Cover with cold water, add bay leaf and peppercorn, and I usually add about a tablespoon of tomato paste, and I don't put any alcohol in my crab stock. I leave that for my decision making when it comes to how I'm going to make my soup. So once the stock is made, and the nice thing about a seafood stock is it only takes about an hour, versus my chicken and veal stock takes 12 hours, and you could run your stock in 7 hours, but a seafood stock is really fast. So once you make your crab stock, excuse me, strain it and reduce it down and make your soup and enjoy.
Thanks, Gene.
And do you use the crab meat from the crabs that you put in the stock?
No, they're useless. No. That's useless. You're going to have to discard that. Yeah. It will have been cooked to death, frankly. So
right.
I use jumbo lump crab as a garnish in my crab soup. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for the call, Gene.
Let's talk to Lisa in Baltimore, who's making chicken soup right now.
Now. Ooh, hi, Lisa. Yum.
Hi.
We're coming over.
Great. Listen, two things. One, I wanted to tell you about my favorite soup, which was a cold cucumber soup that I had as a child on a really hot day.
Nice. Ooh, that can be great.
That was at a restaurant in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. It was so refreshing. Mm. And I was interested in your comment about cilantro and lime in chicken soup. And if I was to do that, when do you add that in?
Right at the end.
Right.
So
the end.
I would actually pour the broth into the bowl and then a little bit of fresh lime on top and just roughly, roughly chop cilantro right at the very moment. You know, the perfume, the cilantro hitting that hot soup and you're sitting there, it is just beautiful.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah, it's a garnish, not part of the soup.
Right. It's a garnish. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, wonderful. Well, thank you. Well, come on over.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks, Lisa.
Bye-bye.
I love making cold cucumber soup. That's one of my favorite chilled soups is cucumber.
That can be
yummy.
Chilled soup will sell on the right day.
Mm-hmm.
Soup that never, ever sells, dessert soups. I can't think of a single pastry chef that doesn't want to do dessert soup.
Yeah, I would agree with you. They're not very popular here.
No.
And I can understand
that. Some that
I don't think people think of a chilled soup. I mean, we do serve a strawberry one that I love.
If you tuck a nice panna cotta.
I was going to say, but it's around a panna cotta.
Inside of a strawberry soup.
We don't have any problem selling
then,
that
then
one.
Then that will sell. But,
but yeah, if you just do a soup, it's not going to sell.
That's always one of those.
I can understand that.
Just recipe for not selling in a restaurant.
Okay.
But it can be delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk to Angela in Mount Washington. Angela, go ahead.
Hey, Angela.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Beautiful day.
So I am calling because I love roasted cauliflower,
mm-hmm.
but I live by myself, and oftentimes I have too much of it left over, and I'd like to get a recipe for a roasted cauliflower soup.
Okay, and is it no dairy?
Well, exactly. I'm lactose sensitive.
Sure.
Okay. But I don't really have that much of an aversion to maybe using a grass-fed butter that's from grass-fed cow or something like that, but no cream.
I think you can do it without dairy at all if, you know, why push it? I would, you know, and the fact that you used the word roasted, because when I make my cauliflower soup, I don't roast it, but I love roasted cauliflower. I love it that way. So you're going to get some natural caramelization on the cauliflower in the oven. So if you just roast it with corn oil, a little bit of salt and pepper, and until it's nice and tender, and then saute, you can just saute onion and shallot. Onion and shallot is a foundation of almost all soup. So if you, or onion at least, if you were just to saute that in corn oil, and add the roasted, and you could add an herb. You could introduce an herb. I'm trying to think what I can't think of one right now, but maybe even just a.
I'll tell you, nutmeg is pretty darn
well, spices,
good.
Spices, yeah, we do yeah. put. Yeah, I put nutmeg and cayenne pepper in my cream of cauliflower soup, but even an herb, I can't think of an herb, but yeah.
And you can also
earthy spices are very good with cauliflower.
You can also add a boiled potato to help thicken when you go to puree it, and that's kind of nice to...
Yeah, because cauliflower is a very watery vegetable, so if you add that potato starch in the form of a potato, and I would use a Yukon Gold, that does help to give you some viscosity. And then just use chicken stock or water if you don't want to have the chicken stock, and salt and pepper, and then you can spice it, as Tony said, with a little nutmeg or cayenne and black pepper, and then just... I would puree it. Now, you could make that a broth-based soup. You could do a chicken stock-based soup. I would probably skip the shallot, maybe even the onion. I probably wouldn't put any onion product in and just leave the beautiful florets in there. And you know, that might be something you want to finish with a little bit of fresh lemon. We were just talking about chicken stock with cilantro and lemon or lime. But, yeah, a little bit of lemon in there. If it's a broth-based soup would be very nice. So you could go that way as well.
This sounds delicious.
Aww,
Thanks, Angela.
Thanks for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
Beautiful voice.
Let's talk to Mike in Towson. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted maybe some advice. I do a pretty simple soup. Like I'll just take some fine diced onion and saute it in olive oil, and then I'll chop up some kale and wilt it, and then some cubed potatoes, and just put it in some chicken stock.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, super simple. I got kids. I'm trying to do it quick. I'm just wondering if you guys had any pointers how to make that a little bit nicer, or if you would not wilt the kale and then you'd put
why
it in
not?
The
I, would, I mean, or... good for you that you are working with kale.
If it, I mean, I will admit this is going to sound like Cindy, but I would wilt the kale and bacon.
I was just going to say that's the one thing I'd add to that thing is bacon. bacon.
Especially if you're dealing with kids, that's.
You, and,
my 18-month-old tried to put butter on her bacon the other day.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. That's awesome. The other thing with that is that you could, I mean, this kind of takes it into another hemisphere, but if you're trying to feed a family, you could buy a pork shoulder. That's a big piece of meat, or you could buy a piece of a pork shoulder and braise it in there first and then add the potatoes and the kale at the end. And then you actually have dinner. You know, you really have dinner. So that would be good, too. But when Tony talks about bacon, I would add lardons to it. So that's a crispy small dice of bacon to it, or a large dice
of
bacon.
Like the finish?
At the finish.
Like on top?
Yeah, you got it.
What do you think of putting some some small meatballs to cook in the broth.
I love that idea. And I do you like lamb? Do you eat,
I
do
like
eat lamb?
I don't know that my kids would like lamb. Well, I guess maybe, I was thinking maybe like half could, ground beef.
Yeah, of course.
Pork,
of course.
Maybe what's it called when you mix the milk with the bread?
A panade, yes.
Yes, a panade and maybe some Italian seasonings in the,
go
the
for
bread.
It. Go for it. Yeah, and the other thing is maybe you can teach your kids to like lamb. Slip some in there. You know, maybe it's pork and lamb mixture, ground. You know, you can ask your butcher for it and mix the two together because it'll just give it really good flavor. And don't tell them it's lamb. And then afterwards, when they like it, you can tell them it's lamb.
In terms of adding the materials, so I have a pan with some olive oil. Wilting the onions, adding some flavor. Would you put the cubed potatoes in to cook them a little bit, or are you then just putting the broth in and then
you cook
the potatoes in the broth?
Yeah, you cook the potatoes in the broth. You don't need to brown them in the pan or do anything to them in the pan first. Yeah, you cook.
And would you use a particular kind of potato, maybe to release more starch?
I would use a Yukon Gold potato.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Good.
Thank you very much.
For
thanks, Mike.
All right. Thank you, Mike.
Bye.
Bye.
Jane, please hold the line. We're going to take a short break. Call us, 410-662-8780, with your soup questions or stories. Email us, foremanwolf@wipr.org. We've got more emails to get to. Happy to take your calls. And then we'll commence the suffering of the chef's challenge. All of that and more on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780. We want to hear your favorite soup, your soup stories, your jazziest, craziest soup you had in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. You can give us a call now. Jane in Catonsville has been holding. Thanks, Jane.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Well, I'm calling my favorite soup my mom used to make, and it was Vichyssoise. Mm-hmm. But she made it. I think it must have had a lot more leeks than most recipes.
Okay.
And she would make a great big thing of it and put it in a container in the refrigerator. And all day I would go by and take a little sip. And a ton of chives. Mm. A ton of leeks and a ton of chives.
That's good.
And I loved it.
That's nice.
Yeah, that
love it.
I appreciate the making in that style.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep.
Very good.
I also have a question. Maybe it's not the right time. Maybe I should call back. But I need I need an idea for a substitute for Duxelles and beef Wellington.
Why? But I mean, what's your goal?
Okay.
Do you have mushroom issues?
Well, I'm going to make it for the holiday, but I have a family member who cannot stand mushrooms. So I was going to make a little side piece with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I make it with brioche instead of puff pastry, and I wrap it in the prosciutto. You know, the Duxelles, and wrap it in the prosciutto. And I thought, what could I use instead? What would have that umami thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And make a little bit of olive tapenade with like Ligurian black olives. Yeah.
Yes! That sounds so good. That would be okay for hot.
It would be delicious. Yeah. Yes. Do it. Yay.
Oh, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jane.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Mm-hmm.
Have a good Sunday.
I've got a couple of cool emails here.
Okay.
From Oren in Baltimore. My grandma would make the most amazing beef stew.
Ooh.
It was simple with beef cubes and veggies, but the kicker was the dumplings. She would drop batter on top of the hot pot of soup and let them steam in the pot.
How wonderful.
A little salt and pepper. Amazing. My mother makes a recipe every fall now. It is a recipe I intend to learn from her to carry on the tradition. Pure love in a pot.
That sounds so good.
Good for you, Oren.
Yes.
And we've got, not on soup, but a good question from Catherine in Annapolis. I have very basic level cooking skills. I want to branch out and learn how to prepare fish at home for my family. I'm wondering, what is a quick and easy prep for baking fish in the oven? I want to use something that is easy to find in a grocery store. How can I tell what fish is the right one to buy? How do I tell if it's fresh? This feels very intimidating.
That's understandable. As far as the freshness thing, I would go to a grocery store that I trust and feel confident in, and then tell the butcher, I want the freshest piece of fish you have there. Why don't you tell me, you know, if you tell them you don't have to have this, that, or the other thing, if you just say, what's the freshest thing you have?
What arrived today?
Well, what arrived today? The other thing is, if you're buying a whole fish, which you probably don't want to because you're trying to keep it simple, but if you see a whole fish, the eyes need to be clear, the gills need to be red, the flesh needs to be firm, and it needs to smell good. And in the end, even if it's a butchered piece of fish, it needs to smell good. I mean, of course, it's going to smell sort of like fish, but pretty much it should just smell good. You know, there should be not a thing. Yeah, and of course, smell, an absolutely zero ammonia smell.
It should smell like the sea, which actually just kind of smells salty.
Yeah.
Not like what we think of as fish.
Fishy, yeah. Yeah, and also if you're, well, I mean, you're probably not going to be allowed to touch it, but if you could touch it, if it was really
don't
slimy.
Don't be a fish toucher, Catherine.
If it was really slimy, don't buy it. But really, pretty much it, if it's a butchered piece, which is probably what it's going to be, just make sure it smells good. And then with a simple prep, I mean, I like olive oil and fresh lemon juice and capers on a piece of fish. I mean, and I don't know if children will eat capers, but I mean, maybe well, I think, if you tell them they're not scary, they will. But go ahead.
I think the part of the question she's asking is how to deal with cooking it. She asked about baking it in the oven.
Well, that's easy.
Yeah, I mean, that's
just,
there's only so many fish that are nice baked in the oven.
Right. I like to sear my fish in a pan. So we always talk about using a steel pan. Those are inexpensive. That's a good thing about a solid steel pan. And if you can get a solid steel, it's one piece of metal. It's a solid piece of metal. So you can get it super hot. And I don't mean past the smoking point, but a good hot pan, a nice amount of oil coating the bottom of the pan, pat the fish dry on a paper towel and put it skin side down in the pan first. Buy a fish spatula. It will save you. You can use a fish spat for a million different things in the kitchen. It's a slotted spatula, sort of, I don't know how to say the shape, but it's an odd shape. And you press down on the fish, especially if it has still skin on it. You want to press that skin down in that hot oil, which will crisp up the skin and keep the fish from curling up. Don't smash it. Just press it lightly. And then once it's nice and seared, and if it has the skin nice and golden, flip it over. Sear it like for a minute on the backside. By the way, you've already seasoned it with a little bit of salt, and then go into the oven. Depending on what you're aiming for, if it's a piece of salmon, you can eat salmon medium rare. If you want it cooked almost all the way through, say an 8-ounce piece of salmon is probably 6 minutes in the oven at 375 degrees. Don't cover it. Just let it be in there open, and lightly season it when it comes back out. But for medium rare,
if it's flaking, it's too long.
Definitely. You want to cook fish, if you don't want it medium rare, if it's not appropriate for the fish, or if you just don't want to eat it that way, you want it to be moist. So you really want it to be sort of technically medium well when it comes out of the oven, and that way it'll still be moist and you'll like it.
If you really do want to bake fish, the Spaniards are pretty good at that sort of stuff. In the Vizcaína is a sauce that is made, and there's a lot of things made in that style. So cod and hake are the two fish that probably do the best baked in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
And you could very simply, like salt, olive oil, rub the fillet a mm-hmm. little bit in a pan, 375, 400 degrees. Cover with Vizcaína sauce. And it's a recipe you can look up on the internet. It's not that complicated. It's a good tomato and pepper and onion sauce with saffron. And the fish and the sauce cooked together, you can't have them like a big broad tray. It has to be in a pot. But you really don't have to worry about doneness so much, because you just cook the cod until it's cooked through, or the hake, also known as merluza in Spain, until it's cooked through. But that's a pretty nice way to be able to just pop that fish in the oven and not deal with searing it if you want to.
Hey, Tony, you had referenced a soup you liked. Do you want to talk about that? That recipe?
I will try to do it. I'll try to do it on the quick. So
okay.
It's a Ligurian fish stew that I talked about earlier on. So you make a shrimp stock, and you've talked about it a million times. You reserve the peeled shrimp and use the shells. You boil for like 5 minutes from cold in water. After you make that stock, after you remove the shells, then poach the fish, and you could use orata, you could use cod, you could use both. Any of them, even branzino, would work for it. You don't need the skin, please. When that's done, you pull the fish and flake it off the bone. Any bones that are still in the pot, remove them. You want to put it through a sieve, a very fine sieve, a couple of times to make sure that you don't have any bones and you don't have any, you know, larger particles from that. And separate pot, a heavy one, you want to sweat mirepoix, fennel, garlic, a little crushed clove and black pepper once that's sweated. Toast those in that same pot to get a lot of flavor in that oil. Just use canola oil or grapeseed oil. Deglaze that once before everything browns, but when it's, you know, it's sort of like sizzling and you can smell the seasonings. Deglaze that with a little, just dry white wine. Pigato is ideal, the most important white from Liguria. And then you add that fish stock to that heavy pot. You add crushed tomato at that point. If you have to use canned, use San Marzano. If it's in season, use fresh tomatoes. A little bit of tomato paste. A little bit of fresh orange peel. You don't want the white pith, just the peel. Let that develop flavor for a little bit. You'll probably reduce by volume, what, maybe 20%, something like that.
Sure.
And then you add clams, whatever nice clams you can find that are fresh.
Sounds good.
Once the clams open, the soup is ready to go. You can add a pretty good amount of olive oil if you want to finish that. If you can get tagliache oil, which is really delicate, add that just right on the bowl. Don't add a whole lot to the soup, but you do want some in the soup that has pretty good flavor. If you want chili flake, add chili flake. Make sure you check your salt. For a garnish, the fennel tops, parsley, a little bit of the celery tops, all chopped very fine. Make a nice garnish, nice grilled bruschetta with that. And you can make a pesto, not Ligurian basil pesto, but one with the olives and garlic and a little bit of crushed almond. And that's pretty darn nice to have as the little condiment for the bruschetta to have with the soup. So
sounds good, Tony.
Yeah. And here is where we arrive at the chef's challenge.
All right, I'm going to do this really fast. Yukon goat potatoes, broccoli, parsnips, carrots, chicken breast on the bone, blue cheese, your choice, buttercream, Italian parsley, barley, chicken stock, bacon, green onion, and Gruyere. You can go potatoes, parsnips. So there's no meat here.
Besides the chicken,
oh, yeah, chicken. Okay.
Yeah, there's zero meat besides the chicken.
I'm going to sear the chicken. Excuse me, I'm going to sear the chicken breast in the pan. I'm glad it has the bone on it. It's going to have more flavor. And brown it quickly. Pop it over, and I'll add the parsnips and the carrots. I'll just slice them sort of on a bias, pretty thin. Add those to the pan because chicken doesn't take that long to cook. Meanwhile, I'll be cooking the barley and the chicken stock. I will add a little bit of bacon to that pan with the carrots and the parsnips. While the chicken's roasting in the oven, I'll also thinly slice some Yukon Gold potatoes and add it to that as well and let all that work together. And, Italian parsley. I'll roughly chop the Italian parsley. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. Okay, so then the blue cheese. What am I supposed to do with that? Okay, well, apparently because I have cream, I'm going to make a blue cheese cream sauce.
Yes!
Oh, boy. And finish it with a little Gruyere and then add the finely chopped green onion. And I think I did it. I did it, Tony. That's it. Okay. Oh, broccoli. I'll eat
did
that
while
I'm
cooking. Did you use the barley?
I said I'll cook it, the barley and the chicken stock.
What are you going to do with it?
Well, I don't know. I'll just serve it. Oh, a little soup. It'll be a little soup on the side.
Okay.
A barley soup.
All right. Freshwater eel. Grazie. Mm-hmm. Garlic, onion, shallot, extra virgin olive oil, thyme, rosemary, basil, bay leaf, preserved tomato, fingerling potatoes, poblanos, butter, white wine, baguette, arugula. So the eel. What I'm going to do is roast the poblanos on a fire so I can peel them. Just whether it's over a burner or something like that. And then once they're peeled, I'm going to marinate them in the extra virgin olive oil with some of the fresh basil and a little shallot. And the eel, what I want to do is poach it. So I guess I have the white wine to work with, white wine and water, and probably a little bit of the, I'll try to revive some of the preserved tomato for that poaching liquid, the bay leaf, garlic, onion. I kind of wish I had mirepoix, and I wish I had lemon for that, because the whole lemon, a lemon peel, is nice for that. Poach that eel. When it's poached, then you peel it. When it's peeled, you get the fillets. The fillets, if you have the baguette, so what I'd want to do is toast a little bit, get breadcrumb, and then you take the little fillets of the poached eel, and you just get them crispy in a pan in the breadcrumb, and you can just serve the chopped arugula. And the fingerling potatoes, you roast them with the fresh thyme, just crush them, serving them with the olive oil too. So then you have the peppers, you have garnishes for the eel. So I like the eel.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Thanks for giving me the eel.
Sure. That came from Will.
Yeah. That's, yeah, we're getting.
The man answering the phone.
As always, able assistance. Let's see. We have an email from Richard in Charles Village. I love the creaminess and minerality of a good white Burgundy. Is there anything with a similar flavor profile that you can suggest from California or somewhere else in the U.S.? You can get really high quality Chardonnay that definitely tastes like it's from the West Coast. The thing about any distinctive wine, whether it's white or red, is that the place is a bigger stamp on it than anything else. Mm-hmm. In California, the Chardonnay is always going to be, or even in Oregon or in Washington State, the alcohol will drop a little bit as you go further north, but not a whole lot. And you don't have the nights that are as cool as you do in Burgundy, so you don't quite have the acidity. So that changes the texture. There's more glycerin. That oiliness that you get in the Chardonnays on the West Coast is going to be there. For freshness and something that's bright, in Oregon there's some Pinot Blancs that are being made that are definitely that way. But it's hard. I mean, frankly, it's hard. One little sleeper Chardonnay that's not from Burgundy is from the northwest of Italy in Valle d'Aosta. And there's a winery called Le Cret, C-R-E-T-E-S. And he makes fantastic unoaked Chardonnay and also a pretty lavish oaked Chardonnay called Cuvée Bois that are very fairly priced for the quality, especially the unoaked. And that will definitely give you a mineral character and some of that freshness that you want. I don't know that you get quite as much complexity from that. So
that's a good,
hopefully that helps. But I hate telling someone you can't get there from here, but to some extent you can't get there from here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, well, if you want to reach us, as I'd said, email us foremanwolf@wipr.org. We'll try to get to your questions or comments in future episodes or answer individual personal situations, which we always seem to get about travel. If you want to download this or any other episode, check out the podcast on WYPR website, WYPR.org. Look for the Foreman and Wolf page, and you can download from a full menu of episodes there. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media,
you can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf or on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
On Instagram, I'm the real Tony Foreman. We don't always do it, but we should thank Will, who's taking the phones.
Thank you, Will.
And
you're awesome.
He's always does a great job of trying to make us look reasonable.
Exactly.
And and Luke, who's the producer and engineer of this program, Luke Spignol.
He's the best.
Who is the best.
We're thankful for him.
So, thanks so much for listening today.
And happy Sunday.